Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 14.
Episode 1.
This is Writing Excuses, up front or on the fly.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're starting season 14.
We are. I am Brandon.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I am Dan.
I'm Howard.
And welcome to season 14. This is the last in our kind of five-year arc, which we started with season 10. We have done How to Write a Novel. We have done elemental genres, and then we did plot and character, and now we're doing setting. As it occurs to me, maybe we should have done that in reverse order.
Hey, you know, I feel like everything is happening for a reason. It's like we planned it.
We're discovery writing.
It's not
podcast.
Really all that uncommon to get to the end of the novel and start your world building.
That is true. That is true. And this
Which
year,
is what we're talking about today.
We will be studying world building. And we will have some guest hosts, which we'll introduce to you as their weeks come up. This first week, we're generally going to take some writing topic, general topic, and attack it from world-building direction. So we're going back to our kind of familiar, how much do you do up front? How much do you do as you're writing? And how do you work those two different styles together? But we're talking specifically about world-building this time. So let me ask you guys, how much world building do you do up front before you start writing a given story?
So for me, it varies. I will either, like, I usually have some idea of sort of a general shape of things. And then it's not until I get deeper into it that I start to go, oh, you know, maybe I should really know about, which I find is actually very similar to the way that I do research for historical stuff, that I have sort of broad picture ideas and then I refine my research. It's just that when I'm doing world building, the reference library is my own brain.
Okay.
I do enough world building. I world build, or I mean, with Schlock Mercenary, I am often appending to the world building, adding politics or whatever. I world build until I have reached an interesting question.
And this is for a given story arc?
For a given story arc. An interesting question, interesting character twist, something that I feel like I could explore for an entire book. Mm-hmm. And then I begin outlining the story. And usually within the outline process, I'll realize, oh, I need to answer some more questions. I need to keep world building. But that first point, I world build until I found something that is a really fascinating question. And when I say question, like a moral question, like, you know, what if?
Right.
Or why, or...
Could you name any of those off on the fly, so to speak? I don't want to put you on the spot. I know when people ask me questions like this for a specific example in my lines, mm-hmm. I always am like,
You're like, yes, I do this all the time, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Sure. If immortality technology is freely available, where is the pain in death?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good science fiction question.
I mean, as soon as I ran into that, I realized, oh, the stories are going to tell themselves. This is awesome. And as I write, people are answering that question. Characters are answering that question for themselves. They are finding their pain points. I'm discovering that. And as I discover them, there are related pieces elsewhere in the world building that I know I'm going to need to lock down.
Yeah, for me, a lot of my world building up front that I'm doing is searching for those points of friction in conflict. I'll often be looking for what's going to make a problem for the characters, what's going to make a problem in the world. An example of this being, you know, Stormlight Archive, it's pretty obvious. I started with the storms.
Yeah.
This is going to change all life around it. And that's the sort of thing I spend a lot of time world building up front.
Yeah, I find that it's similar for me in that there's often ramifications and ripples. So I've talked before about in Ghost Talkers that Mrs. Richardson she's not in my outline at all.
Right.
Anywhere. But as soon as I have, and I just had her knitting because I needed something for her to do with her hands, and then learned about knitted codes, and that gave me all of these ripples that went through the world. And this is a thing that I'll say often happens, that sometimes you'll discover something deeper in, and then you have to go back and do revisions. And I'm actually going to flag one that you all may have noticed, which is that I introduced myself as Mary Robinette.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an example of world building, that when we set up to do the podcast initially, I had to make the choice. Do I introduce myself as Mary Robinette, which in the South is a double-barreled name, or do I introduce myself as Mary, which is easier? And I made that choice because I had given up decades ago. But the ramification of that is that everyone thinks that Mary is the correct thing. And so I was like, let me adjust my world building. But it has this ripple effect on everything else. And that's one of the things that I think is really interesting when you're looking at your novel. You'll discover something about a character or about the world, and then you have to go back and make it consistent. And
fix it all. So we're retconning the podcast now.
We are retconning the podcast.
You've been Mary Robinette
the whole time.
Like
except
12
we're
years.
Not, we're, I'm, okay, I mean, you're making a joke, and it's funny, and I like that, but we're
you
not.
Said
thank you
said with
Howard.
The most deadpan.
We're not, there was actually a very good joke, Dan. You should write that down. we're not retconning it, though. What we are doing by now naming the person who used to be Mary Robinette, is exploring an aspect of Mary's character which has always been present, but which, for various reasons, Mary has not floated up into the foreground of the story. And now she is, and the audience learns new and exciting things.
Yeah. And it's like, it's also, it's a hanging a flag on it technique, which we use a lot too. When we have those moments where we're like, sometimes I will do this too. It's like, I've discovered a thing, and rather than going back and fix it, I will justify why no one has noticed it up until this point.
I have never done that before.
Ever.
Let me ask you, Mary Robinette, then. When you discovered the knitting thing, at what point did you go and study that? And at what point did you put it into the story? So when you're creating this character, you're adding knitting to their character. Did you write the whole book? Did you stop? Did you world build and then go back to the book?
So what I did was I made a note to self in brackets and then kept going. And then a couple of different points where I'm kind of waffling on something anyway. I'm procrastinating a little bit. I remember very specifically going back and adding her bringing a sweater. You know, that someone in the circle was now wearing a sweater that she had made for them. I remember going back and adding that to highlight the importance of the knitting and bring it to the foreground. So that was, but the she had already knit wrist warmers for everybody.
Okay, yeah.
Because, and I think that was actually, that was actually why I made her knit, was because I wanted to, it was a world building detail that I put in to talk about how cold it was because of the spirits.
Mm.
So that world building, so that's one of those,
yeah. Uh-huh.
those details that like totally ripples down. It's like they all have wrist warmers.
Right. You need to show that it's cold, not just tell us it's
right.
cold. You need a character, therefore, who is doing this thing. You hit on that. I love it when that comes together in the story.
Yeah, and all these other things pop up. One of the world building details that I completely made up late is how the monsters work in the John Cleaver series.
Huh.
I did not actually codify until book four. Like, nice. I personally didn't even know how it worked until book four. We started, and I turned the first one in, and my editor, Moshe, he said, well, you need to make sure for the rest of the series that there's some kind of consistent element. And so on his recommendation, that's when I had all the monsters dissolve into tar, basically. And eventually in book four, I realized I have to know how they work. I have to know how they function. And so that is something that I had to make up throughout the series. I kept throwing in more details and finally had to sit down and go, okay, let's
one of the reasons
define this.
One of the reasons that that was so effective, because what you were writing is horror.
Mm-hmm.
And if, as a writer, you've already determined how the demons work and fallen in love with it, you are more likely to reveal that detail early rather than late. And by saving, we don't know through the entire first trilogy, and that keeps the first trilogy scary in a way that the second trilogy, you had to do different things because we now had an understanding of how the demons work.
Yeah, yeah. Although with the caution, dear listener, that withholding of information from the reader is usually not as interesting as giving them information.
Yeah.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go ahead and stop for our book of the week.
So our book of the week is The Collapsing Empire by John Scalzi. And in this book, there's a big galactic empire, and people travel from point A to point B through the flow. And what is happening is that the flow is suddenly shutting down, and they don't actually know how it works. It existed before they got there. So this empire that's basically built on these, what we'll call them wormholes out there, they're not— that's built on being able to travel these vast intergalactic distances is collapsing. And it's wonderful storytelling about what it's like to be on a world where you know that you are not going to be able to leave that planet.
And you're used to the idea.
Of being able to, and specifically the way it's collapsing in on itself, you can go to the planet, but you cannot get off of it again during this period. So it's a really interesting thing. And part of the reason that I thought this would be a good example for our listeners for this particular episode is that I know that John had those big ideas about the flow and the idea of it collapsing. But I also know that he is very far on the pantser end of the spectrum, and that most of the other details, a lot of those other things, he figured out as he was writing it, and you cannot tell which is which.
Excellent. So that is The Collapsing Empire by John Scalzi. So I'm really interested in this specific idea. I think on the podcast in previous years, we've talked a lot about how to research and do your world building, but I'm really interested in this idea of times when you're in the middle and the thick of it, and then you stop and realize you need something and how you actually go about doing that. And for me, it is almost exclusively coming from character because character is the thing I do the least upfront work on. When I'm writing the book, often the passions of a given character and their interests and how religious they are or whatever on whatever axis we're looking at suddenly drives me into saying, well, I need to have these steps. And a lot of the times, even though I'm an outliner, I will just keep going and say, make sure you know more about this when you come back to the story. And even as an outliner, I do a lot of that, a lot of the asterisks, a lot of the make sure you add this in here sort of thing. Do you guys do that?
Oh, how no,
do
you- never.
There are two categories of questions for me. Category one is... I don't remember how many ships they actually had in that one fleet, or I haven't determined how many ships they have in that fleet. Anything I write now needs to either be in brackets, Howard, figure out what this number is, or it needs to be a strip that allows it to continue to be nebulous. And then there are places where there's a recent strip that was a good example of this. If I don't have the fact exactly right, the punchline doesn't work. I cannot write this scene until I have that piece of information, in which case I will stop writing in order to go research a thing or figure out a thing. In this case, I had to email Mike Cole and ask if an executive officer, you know, the joke was the captain goes down with the ship, the executive officer musters the dead. Because the XO, they are in a place where the dead are recovering in a, you know, virtual space, and the XO is taking role. You know, the XO musters the dead. And Mike's response was, that is something that an XO would say. I've never heard it before. I was like, oh, Mike, thank you so much. That is perfect. That is exactly the ground I want to be on. I could not have written the joke, though, without somebody telling me that.
Mm-hmm. Any other examples, specific ones, from your books or stories?
So in the Mirador series, my cyberpunk, I did a lot of upfront world building on the kinds of technology that I wanted to have. And, you know, drones that did everything, and everyone has a computer in their head, and started writing and realized that I had inadvertently created what was either a post-scarcity or incredibly wealthy society in order to have that level of ubiquitous technology. And so kind of the off-the-cuff world building that I had to do was to figure out, well, I don't want that. How can I still have all the toys without, you know, while also having economic pressure? And that is where the idea that robots have taken all our jobs and that there's nothing left for humans to really do, that's where that came from, was me trying to patch the hole and make the rest of the world building work.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar with those holes. One of the things that I've got in the Glamorous Histories is that I have I decided that, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, that that the glamour does not actually cast light, because if it does, then why would you have candles and all of that? But astute readers will notice that I also refer to a warming charm, and and the problem is that if you can actually generate heat with this, that there are a lot of different things start to unravel. And by the time I realized that, the book was already published.
Right.
So then I had to justify it. I'm like, well, okay, so why? So maybe it's really dangerous. And then, but if you can do this heat transfer, and that was what more or less, like that was what caused the cold mongers to happen,
mm-hmm.
was having to justify this decision that I had already made. And,
you know, there's an adage that the game designer, the head designer of Magic the Gathering uses, which is restrictions breed creativity.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've always heard, and I'm sure he got somewhere. And I think a lot of times people are afraid that their world building is going to have holes. But you're going to inevitably have holes in your world building.
Mm-hmm.
And learning how to take that and kind of roll with it can often lead to stronger and more interesting storytelling later on.
Yeah. There's a saying in puppetry, if you can't fix it, feature it.
Yeah. That's a great saying.
Yeah. At the same time, there are times when you're like, this makes complete and total sense, and people will still see it as a problem. Like in Calculating Stars, I have an email that you can write to me and say, anachronisms at. And I genuinely want to know, but the number of people who have written to me to complain about the transistor radio, and I'm like, I've launched satellites. We've got three satellites in 1952 already in orbit. Part of the reason that we did that was because actually transistors come in a little sooner. And the reason the transistor radio is there is to let you know that. But it reads as a mistake.
Right, right. Yeah, I would say one of the most interesting aspects of this for me was, I've spoken about this a lot, with the Way of Kings, there's a main character in the final product who was not a main character in the original draft. His name is Adolin. And what happened is I needed to split off a bunch of chapters from a different main character because they were feeling too at conflict with themselves, and I needed two strong characters who had strong opinions rather than one character who was vacillating between two opinions. That's the easy way of putting it. And so I said, well, I'm going to make his son a viewpoint character and give his son the other perspective. And it ended up working really well.
Yeah.
But then the son, who's a duelist and very interested in high fashion and things like this, made me say, well, I need the stuff that he's passionate about.
Yeah,
I need to know this. And he's become a very big part of the books because of this thing I changed in the first book. And I think that a lot of times writers are scared of this when they don't need to be. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you do want to try to not have holes, but you're going to anyway. So yeah. Learning to roll with them is the
yes.
way to go.
And sometimes, you know, even when you don't, people will think you do.
Yes.
Well, and something that we've talked about before and that you can see a lot in writing is when the characters are driving the story and when the story is driving the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think characters like Adolin, one of the reasons that he is so interesting is because you built the rest of the characters first. And he came out of the world. He was developed more organically because he had to be, because the world already existed.
So he's a native. Everybody else moved in.
Kind of the world drove him in a way that he didn't. That it didn't drive the creation of the other characters. And I think that you can tell.
Right. And it creates, in some ways, a much stronger, well, a strong in a different way. We are out of time, but Dan has some homework.
All right. So we decided we were going to gamify this for ourselves to keep this fun. So because we've been talking about kind of improvising your world building, we are going to give you three world building elements, and then you need to write a scene incorporating them. And so these are set for you in advance. The rest of the world building you have to make up on the fly to patch all the holes. Okay.
And Dan doesn't know what these are.
And I don't know what they are. The three of them have written something down on these little cards, and I'm going to read them. Here are your three world building elements. Red food is taboo. Hairstyles are important. And different species or races of Sophant who cannot interbreed or share food, all existing in the same space. So there you go. We have two food-related ones. That's kind of cool. So those are your three elements. Write a scene using those. Fill in the rest of the holes as you go, as they appear.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.